the whole load management. We see Vladdy Guerrero missing a game on Sunday. Now we hear some Austin Matthews, I think, even once referenced it in an interview about, you know, that element. And Kawhi was a unique situation that he only, what, played 7 or 9 games the season before and was really handled masterfully as far as the season went on. But do you see this growing in the sport more given what happened with Kawhi?
I think so. And I mean, I'd be interested in hearing what you guys think as well, from obviously from the player and management perspective that you guys both bring. To me, it's clear that it works for the Raptors. It worked for Kawhi. They kept the guy healthy, generally speaking, over the course of the year, other than some minor bumps and bruises. And even at times in the postseason when it looked like he was really laboring, he still had the ability to come back, you know, 36, 48 hours later, give it his all and play in every postseason game and help bring the Raptors to the championship. So I think now that that bar has been set, or that example has been set, I think a lot of guys around the league might be looking at that saying, listen, why do I want to go through the grind of 82 games if I could potentially play 70 games or 60 games and then make sure that I'm geared up at 100% for the postseason? I think the biggest key to the whole thing, and I know it's something I tweeted out yesterday or the day before, I've been saying this now for a couple of years, even before Kawhi, Gord, and Mike, is I think the problem that exists is then within the organizations, and it's not just the NBA. It happens in baseball. I'm 99% sure it's happening in hockey. I don't know about football, but the tiered pricing or the dynamic pricing or whatever you want to call it that most organizations seem to have, where they're charging more or less based on the quality of the opponent, I don't think that teams can do that any longer. I don't know if the leagues can allow teams to do that any longer. If you're going to charge more for the Yankees or more for the Lakers, you know, or more for the Toronto Maple Leafs coming to town, but then risk that Austin Matthews or Aaron Judge or LeBron James doesn't play in that game simply because he's resting. And I think that's the problem. I think you need to come up with just an average price, and let's go back to the days where it's $100 for a game no matter who the opponent is, because I think it's the fans that ultimately end up losing out more than anybody else. It's not really affecting the teams or the players. I think it's just simply affecting the people that are spending the money to come out to support, especially the and see the superstars, and then they run the risk of not seeing said superstar.
Yeah, I can't see it happening in hockey where you're going to rest an Austin Matthews or Tavares, and people are going to come down to Scotia and be like, well, I just paid $400 or $500 for a ticket, and now one of our best three players is not playing because of load management. When you talk about Leonard, though, from my sources, I've heard he was playing injured all year, and it was a quad injury. I don't know how true that actually is, because when we're talking about like what happens if you see him in the Clippers this year and he doesn't take any load management games, which could be the case, because has he taken this much time off in other years?
He's never taken that much time off, and I think, Mike, it speaks to the point that Gordy was making too, having only played, you know, less than 10 games the previous season. There was some serious question going into the year, how healthy is he, and how needed was this load management? And to your point, you know, whether it was a quad injury or not, I'll be, you know, completely honest with you, nobody really knew. And I know our colleague, Michael Grange, on the .ca side of things, and we do a lot of the coverage on the TV side, he wrote multiple times over the course of the year, does anybody really know what the injury is? Because nobody really officially ever came out with the Spurs or with the Raptors for that matter, or within Kawhi's camp to say, this is exactly what the problem is, this is how it needs to be fixed, this is the timeline for the rest, the rehab, etc. It was simply that it was just a leg injury, or to your point, a quad injury. It was very vague what it was, and you just had to trust the medical staff, the training staff, that, well, they're taking care of the best interests of the player. And I think, Mike, that's where maybe at times the disconnect ultimately became so bad with the Spurs and with Kawhi's camp, where they're feeling, well, no, hold on, our guy is experiencing X, but you're saying it's Y, but our guy says he's not right, you're saying that he should be right, you think that he's maybe pulling the wool over the eyes and should be playing. Whereas the Raptors simply, I think, collectively, you know, gained that trust, or simply said, hey, we're going to trust you, believe you, and then you need to trust us and let us work with you then. And hence the reason that I think that the team did all they could to bend over backwards to give as much rest time, as much rehab time to Kawhi, and to manage things over the course of the year. Because if you remember, at the beginning of the season, we were told, all of us, that he eventually will play in back-to-backs. He'll eventually be playing in situations where it might be 4 games in 5 nights. But then as the season went on, he didn't play in that back-to-back. He didn't play in that back-to-back. He rested certain games. And it became that he sat out 22 games over the course of the year. And I think the expectation initially was that he would play more. Now, was it because he was still trying to nurse the injury, or was it simply because that was the plan put in place? I'm not sure if anybody knows, but I think there certainly was or is reason to be skeptical going forward, even if you were the Raptors and you were bringing him back, that, all right, we're going to throw $100, $120, $150 million at this guy. We might extend him even longer beyond that into the Supermax deal and potentially be $200-plus million. And are we paying that amount of money for someone that might play 50, 60 games a year? But does he help us bring us to a championship again? And that's, I think, where you're weighing the pros versus the cons.
Okay, and the other ultimate thing is just win, baby. And I guess what, they were only lost about four games when he didn't play. So that's always a key thing, whether you're Guerrero, Kawhi, or Austin Matthews, or whomever down the road. Let's look at the team next year. Take a breath. You got the championship. Going to enjoy it. Handicapping all the moves that went on. And what does Eric Smith see handicapping this year's version of the Toronto Raptors and then getting into game 83 and plus in the playoffs?
You know, Gordy, I think they're better than a lot of people are maybe giving them credit for, or not enough credit for, because clearly losing Kawhi, are they as good as last year? Probably not. But does that suddenly drop them from being number two in the conference, defending champs, and suddenly being, you know, an 8 seed, a 7 seed, a non-playoff team? I don't think so. When I look around the Eastern Conference, to me, the four top teams in the East, and again, I'll look at the league in a second, but in the East, in no particular order, I still think it's Milwaukee, Toronto, Philadelphia, and Boston. And we can argue about the order at which those teams might land. But I think Philadelphia takes a step forward in some senses defensively by adding an Al Horford. But I think they take a step back in losing a defender and a scorer and a guy who you can give the ball to late in the game in Jimmy Butler, let alone the fact that they lose a veteran shooter in J.J. Redick. So Philly, to me, at the very least, is the same, if not maybe a little bit worse, in losing Jimmy Butler. In my be said for Boston, they weren't able to put it together last year with Kyrie Irving back healthy with that young core of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, etc. But are they actually a better team losing Kyrie Irving and adding Kemba Walker? Maybe it's addition by subtraction. So Boston's still a good team, but are they that much better than a Toronto Raptors team that still has a Marc Gasol, a Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka, and obviously the evolving and emerging potential star in Pascal Siakam, let alone your complimentary pieces, like a Fred VanVleet. So when I look at those three teams, they are the next group behind who I believe is the best team still, the Milwaukee Bucks, who, oh, by the way, lost their starting point guard and a very good young player and a former Rookie of the Year in Malcolm Brogdon. So I think that you look at the East and say there's every reason to think that Toronto can absolutely still be in the mix for one of those top four seeds and thus home court in the first round of the playoffs. The tough thing is for every team in the league, when you look at the Western Conference now, with the Clippers stacked, the Rockets stacked with the addition of Westbrook, the Lakers looking to be back on track, Golden State, even with the injury to Klay Thompson, likely keeping them out until, you know, January, February, still a very good team. I think the champion this year likely comes out of the West because there's so many good teams there. I'm not sure if anybody can compete with that.
Kyle Lowry's not going to the World Cup this year with the injury to his thumb he suffered last year. If we're talking about the championship last year with Leonard and Lowry, how much was it Lowry or Leonard, if you know what I mean? Like, if with Leonard not coming back, can Lowry bring a championship to this team?
I don't think you can bring it alone, Mike, but the key will be how good is Pascal Siakam this year? Can he follow up last year? Because obviously, as good as he was, he also had a certain guy in his team that was taking a little bit more pressure and attention away from him, obviously in Kawhi Leonard. Now, can Pascal be the go-to guy and do it on his own on a night-to-night basis with those other guys that you talk about, Lowry, Gasol, Ibaka, et cetera, not having Kawhi Leonard as the decoy out there, allowing him to freelance and move a little bit more freely on the floor and get what he was looking for? To me, that's the key. And it's not a knock, I don't believe, on Lowry to say, no, I don't believe he can carry the Raptors on his own. If the Raptors are to get back to a championship, if they're to have another 50-plus win year, if they are to defend their title, it will be, like it was a lot last year, even as good as Kawhi was, it will have to be an ultimate team effort. There's not one guy, even Siakam, if he does emerge, if he is an all-star, if he is an MVP candidate, I don't believe he yet, at this stage of his career, is capable of carrying a team. It's going to have to be a collective effort this year for the Raptors. And I think that's the only way that they ultimately win this thing, is if everybody's kind of pulling in the same direction. They can't just rely on one or two guys to lift them up every single game.
Gord Stellick, Mike Zigomanis. You're listening to Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, joined by the former producer of The Big Show and now voice of the Toronto Raptors, Eric Smith, talking some basketball. And you schooled me on basketball, Smitty, and I'll talk about Ziggy talked about not going Kyle Lowry, not going to the World Championships. And if there's a downside, correct me if I'm wrong, because I talked to you about this, I talked to Jack Armstrong about this, that the Raptors had a bit of a window there. They had the international flavor. Jason Capono shot three-pointers. Carlos Delfino was there. But Jorge Garbajosa was just a greasy, effective, underrated player. He played in the Worlds, and he was never the same.
That's true, but I think the one thing that, Gordy, and I know the Dr. G days, that they're a little bit behind you. We've got Dr. G and Dr. Z now bringing it to me. But the one thing you're forgetting, Gordy, that maybe part of the reason he wasn't the same, if you remember, he had the absolutely horrific broken leg suffered playing with the Raptors in Boston. And that's one that I'll never forget because of the fact that we sat about 40 feet away from it when it happened, myself and Jonesy. And Jonesy literally picked up his chair and turned it around to face the crowd because he could not stand looking at the gruesome injury in front of us as Calderon ran out onto the court and literally sat on Garbajosa's chest so that he couldn't see his leg mangled as badly as it was. And I will never forget the sheer, you know, the shriek and the scream that came from that grown man laying on the floor after he shattered his leg. And that was part of the reason, too, Gordy, you know, when he had that injury, he could never really make it back to that level with the Raptors back in the NBA, and it certainly obviously derailed his international career with Spain as well. The interesting thing and the cool thing is he's now one of the top executives with the Spanish Basketball Federation, so he's helping form and helping mold you know, the future generations of that Spanish team. So that's kind of the good, you know, sort of rainbow at the end of the story that you've still got a guy like that involved in the program and helping Spain move forward.
With the Raptors for this coming season now, who do you think is going to make an impact that maybe your part-time fan, you want to call him, doesn't really know about? Who do you see kind of coming up, grabbing more minutes, a guy coming up that's maybe not a well-known name?
You know, the obvious one I could jump out, and it is well-known enough, certainly, Mike, but I'll give you another name after this, is OG Anunoby, because I think OG's got an opportunity to slide right into the starting lineup and replace Kawhi Leonard. You're not going to replace 20, 25 points a night, per se, with OG, but can he be a guy that can score, be a bit of a threat from distance, and certainly be a lockdown defender? He's got the mindset, he's got the body, he's got the frame, he's got the mentality, everything else, but he had a season to forget last year, and for a number of reasons, not the least of which is many personal reasons. He was dealing with a lot away from the floor last year, including the passing of his father, and it just sort of derailed the entire season after a pretty successful rookie year. So I think he's a key guy going into this year that clearly needs to step up and should be given every opportunity to do so. But in terms of new guys or new faces, the one I'm interested to see is Stanley Johnson. You know, a bit of an under-the-radar pickup for the Raptors. This is not a guy that suddenly, oh, you grabbed Stanley Johnson. Wow, you're going to repeat. But no, I think this guy is a good piece to what the Raptors are trying to do. Again, another decent scorer, another decent defender, a former top 10 pick. I think a guy that could slide into the system that the Raptors have, that could play multiple positions at the 1, 2, or 3. And I think it provides the Raptors with, again, that flexibility of having another weapon on the bench. And he's a guy that I'm intrigued to see if he could kind of take off with Toronto to the point where his career really hasn't been able to flourish quite yet.
Now, Smitty, tie a bow on the Kawhi Leonard experience for you. I mean, you guys get to travel with the team. I know a guy like Jose Calderon, you got to know. Some guys you get to know a little bit better than other guys. The perception is Kawhi would keep to himself. I don't know. But what was the Kawhi personality experience like for guys that aren't on the team but with the team like you?
He was certainly all business, but I never found him disrespectful or anything, Gordy. You know, he was clearly there to do a job. I'm not sure if I ran into him right now, if he'd walk right past me. I'm not even sure if he would know my name. But anytime that there was an interview to conduct on a post-game interview when I was doing the TV broadcast or radio for that matter, or you approach him in a scrum at practice or after a game, he never said no. He always did his time as he was, you know, whether it was mandated or not, he was there. And you can't say that about every player, let alone every star. Some guys blow off the media regularly. And Kawhi was there all the time, answering the questions, doing his job. You know, you pass him in the hotel, it's a head nod. It might be an under-the-breath hello, but there was an acknowledgement. On the plane, he sat beside Kyle Lowry on a lot of the flights. He would take part in some of the card games. he would go out and spend a lot of time, you know, away from the game with Lowry, with some of the other teammates. You talk to the players that were around him. He was certainly a fun, approachable, kind of, you know, quiet, dry humor kind of guy. But amongst the media, amongst the broadcasters, the traveling party, he was there to just kind of do his job. And when I say he wasn't there to be your friend, it's not that he was there then to be an a-hole. He was still a decent guy. It's just he had a job to do, you had a job to do, and that was it. There was a separation there. But I didn't ever find him unapproachable or a guy that I would look back on and say, oh, he was a jerk and you know, good riddance. I think he was a man that you know, took a professional approach, and you can't argue with the results of what he ultimately brought Toronto and as a city, let alone as an organization.
Yeah, as a player, as a coach, you know, you always want to leave a team better than, you know, the before you got there. And from everything you just said, it's he's kind of a man of mystery, I guess, amongst fans in Toronto. No one really knows, doesn't say a lot in the media. But from what you're saying, do you think he did leave the Raptors in better shape, even though he's not coming back? Do you think some of the younger guys learned a lot from him? Do you think Kyle Lowry maybe approaches things differently after playing with him for this year?
You know, I look, Mike, at, you just said that prior to that, some of the younger guys, I look at a Fred VanVleet, Norm Powell, OG Anunoby, being exposed to not just Kawhi, but to the championship atmosphere and then the actual championship itself, deep playoff run, hoisting the title, the parade, the spotlight that's on you as champions, you know, in the moment, let alone even in the months following. All of that stuff to me certainly makes the younger players better from experience alone, having a chance to have gone through that to now bring that forward in your young careers, to know that you're not just now Norm Powell NBA player, you're a Norm Powell NBA champion, and what that carries with it. So I think from an experience standpoint and playing alongside Leonard, Lowry, Gasol as a, you know, mid to late season addition, the veteran experience that he provides as well, I think all of those guys are better mentally, let alone physically, as players on the floor. And I think that experience then translates through and carries through into this coming season and hopefully seasons beyond. So, you know, this team, this organization, I think is better for everything that Kawhi brought, and better simply by the fact that they're champs now. I would leave it at that, though. I mean, not to steer your conversation here, but all the chatter about, you know, statues outside and jersey retirements and everything else, I'm not sure if I'm doing anything for a guy that was here for one season, but I will absolutely, till the end of time, give nothing but respect for what that man brought in one season. And I think it also might have helped play into his decision in the offseason. For all we can talk about going back home and starting anew and everything else, there might have been part of Kawhi Leonard saying, man, what more could I do here? Yeah, it'd be nice to win back-to-back championships and be a part of that, but heck, I came. I came with an open mind, but I came and won the championship, won the finals MVP. I don't know. I've set that bar so high. Anything, you know, less than that, it's going to be looked upon as an unsuccessful year if we don't do it again next year. So maybe it's time to move on and try and do it with another organization. So the Raptors have set that bar for themselves now, and it's up to the rest of the clan to try and see if they can get it done.